Blog Talk Radio.
La notte a târziu,
it was very late at night.
Stăteam pe o piatră afară.
I was sitting outside on a rock.
Lui Stan i-am arătat piatra că nu a fost la mine.
As Stan said, I showed him the rock when he came to my home.
Acolo stăm și mă gândeam ce am făcut eu.
And I was just thinking, what did I do?
Plângeam să nu mă vadă familia.
I was crying so my family wouldn't see me.
Deodată am văzut că vine o lumină spre mine.
And all of a sudden I saw a light coming towards me.
Când am văzut lumina, am crezut că e o mașină.
When I saw the light, I thought it was a car.
În Italia și în România m-au urmărit cu mașina să mă omoare.
Because in Romania and in Italy they always try to run me over with cars.
După mine și aici.
So I thought they found me here too.
Dar n-a fost mașină.
But it was not a car.
Că lumina m-a cucerit.
The light surrounded me.
Și din lumina m-a auzit aceeași voce.
And out of the light I heard the same voice.
Era același înger.
It was the same angel.
Dumitru, de ce ești tu disperat?
Dumitru, why are you so despaired?
De ce m-ai pedepsit așa de tare?
Why did you punish me so harshly?
Ce am făcut eu?
What did I do?
Ce nu m-ai lăsat pe mine în pușcărie?
Why couldn't you let me stay in prison?
Familia avea unde să stea.
But my family would have had a home.
Zic, eu n-am unde să plec acasă.
I don't have a bed to lay my head down on.
De ce m-ai adus aici?
Why was I brought here?
Dumitru, te-am adus aici că țara asta va...
Dumitru, I brought you to this country because this country will burn.
Și m-ai adus să mă ard aici și nu m-ai lăsat să mor în pușcărie în țara mea.
So why did you bring me here to burn? Why didn't you let me die in jail in my own country?
Dumitru, taci.
He said, Dumitru, be quiet.
Urcă-te lângă mine.
Get beside me.
Ce aparat a avut, nu.
I don't know what the device was.
M-a tras lângă el.
But he pulled me beside him.
Mi-a arătat toată California.
And he showed me all of California. Do you see what I've shown you?
Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Păcatul lor a ajuns înaintea lui Dumnezeu.
Their sins have reached God.
Și Dumnezeu a hotărât să-i pedepsească pe
foc. And God has decided to punish them by fire.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Las Vegas.
He came and showed me Las Vegas.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va...
And one day it will burn.
Mi-a arătat New York.
He came and showed me New York.
Aici e New York.
This is New York.
Aici Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
In one day it will burn.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Florida.
And then he showed me Florida.
Aici Florida.
This is Florida.
Aici Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
And in one day it will burn.
Da, cu mine ce ai să faci?
But what will you do with me, I
say? Been listening to the Wake Up America message with Dimitri Dudeman. For a copy of this very important message, please go to our website at handofhelp.com. Never before in the history of our country has our nation been in more jeopardy than now. Please order a copy of the video Wake Up America at the handofhelp.com website and get the warning out while we still have time. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us. Yes, we are back. We are live. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast. And after a week-long hiatus, I, Michael Boldea, your host, is ready to get back to it and to discuss everything that's been happening in the land of the free and the home of the brave, lo, this handful of days. It's been, almost 2 weeks? Yeah, almost 2 weeks. And as of February 2nd, 2017, I do not have any buyer's remorse. That's for all the people that wrote in and said, just you wait and see, you'll eat your words. This guy is a wolf in sheep's clothing, and he's going to appoint some liberal to the Supreme Court. If you want me to make your email addresses public, those of you that wrote me those things, let me know. I will be glad to oblige. Because although you strive to remain anonymous, never a smart thing to send foolish emails from your personal email account. So, remember, all those emails? Oh, you should have said you were voting third party. Why? Why? So Hillary Clinton can be president? So we could have a nominee for the Supreme Court that winks and smiles at late-term abortion? Is that why I should have said I was voting third party? Again, in case you haven't heard, the person tapped to take the place of the late and some would say great conservative powerhouse, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, is a staunch conservative. And he happens to be pro-life. In layman's terms, he is against the murdering of babies. And as I've always said, this election was more than just about the person who sat in the Oval Office. It was about the trajectory of the courts and everything else that comes along with occupying the most powerful position in the world. So yeah, no buyer's remorse yet. In fact, I would hazard to say, so far, so good. I am, however, seriously considering the purchase of a snorkel set due to all the melting snowflakes. If not for their tendency to get violent and break things, the reaction of these people would be downright hilarious. Unfortunately, they do have a violent streak, and whenever they don't get their way, just like any undisciplined five-year-old, their first instinct is to throw something, to break something, to pitch a fit, to hold their breath, to elicit a response from the person they're attempting to coerce into doing what they want done. Now, I know they're used to getting their way by just holding their breath and stomping their feet, but it's not going to happen this time. So hold your breath until you pass out. What you want to happen isn't going to happen. Thankfully, someone with an actual spine is in the White House, and the people he surrounded himself with are, well, shall we say, easily swayed by hysterics. They're not easily swayed by fits of rage or even by the throwing of bloody tampons. Classy as always, liberals. Classy as always. You make your constituency proud. But look, the people that Trump surrounded himself with are people that have been, shall we say, in the arena of warfare. They've been shot at multiple times. They've seen people close to them die on the battlefield. A haggard-looking Madonna threatening to expose herself and make everybody go blind doesn't sway these people once you know, they've gone through the life that they've gone through. But they're not going to quit. And you know what? It's okay to relish it just a little bit. I give you permission to relish it just a little bit. Now, I know, I realize this, I've been reading the comments. Some of you are so heavenly minded, you're of no earthly good. You're just sitting in your cocoon, isolated from everything going on around you, waiting for the imminent return of Jesus, clubbing people over the head whenever you get bored, you know, Christian antics and such. But for those of you that still live in the real world, you kind of have to take it as a positive that the newest addition to the Supreme Court will be someone who protects the sanctity of life in the womb. It's a win. It's a good thing. Again, like I said, I know I've seen some of the comments on YouTube, and I've gotten the emails. These things concern us not a bit. We're always to be walking upon the clouds with our minds upon paradise. But you know what? Real lives are at stake here. You know, the innocent, the defenseless. Those who cannot speak for themselves. Those who you are meant to defend and protect if at all possible. So, yeah. I'm going to talk about this as much as I want to or I feel I need to, because it is important. And nothing you say will make me less joyful about the fact that someone who is pro-life will take over the Supreme Court seat vacated by Antonin Scalia. honestly, even when we have a solid win, which is as rare as an eclipse nowadays, there are still people who just can't enjoy it. Who just can't take a breath and say, well, that's a good thing. If less babies are murdered, that's a good thing. If we actually start passing legislation that will make a mother actually see the ultrasound before she decides to put her unborn child through a blender, maybe that's a good thing. But no. My YouTube prophet said everything this man does will be evil. Honestly. People who insist on slinging mud and talking down to anyone who happens to disagree with them, or who didn't see the righteousness of their neighbor two doors down and vote for him. It's over. Get over it. When did we Christians become such a curmudgeon-y lot anyway? When did we make it our life's mission never to smile and never to laugh and never to take a deep breath and enjoy the sun on our faces? I've been dealing with this for the past couple weeks, and you know, I thought once the election happened and once the inauguration and once Washington, D.C. didn't blow up and once Donald Trump didn't accidentally reveal his tail, people would realize, yeah, kind of good things are happening for the conservative crowd. The man's actually talking about, you know, allowing Christian migrants from nations that are actively persecuting them, that are crucifying them, that are beheading them, that are lighting them on fire, allowing those people to come into the country rather than Muslim zealots. We don't care. Our YouTube prophet said evil. So many people just brainwashed into stupid. Because someone said something, and by golly, if that person said it, he's the only man standing on the wall, standing in the breach, standing in the gap. Yeah, I don't know. Elijah thought he was one, remember? I alone am left a prophet of the Lord. And God sort of flicked his ear and said, no, you're not. Stop being so self-important. There's a bunch more people that haven't defiled themselves. So stop thinking you're the only one. Look, even when we have reason to rejoice, it seems like nothing excites us anymore. Nothing makes us cheer or at least acknowledge a good thing when we see a good thing. This is a positive step. A man who will defend the sanctity of life is replacing a man who defended the sanctity of life. And if, Lord willing, 2-3 more seats are vacated during this administration, and those seats are replaced with more pro-life conservative men who understand that it's not okay to murder a baby just because it inconveniences you that you got pregnant, then that's a good thing. Change? Of course it is. Can all this joy turn on a dime and become worse than it's ever been? Of course it can. But for now, for this moment, something good came out of it. Who knows how many lives were protected because of this one Supreme Court appointment? dwell on that. See, you know how noble a man Judge Gorsuch is by the amount of hate and vitriol that has suddenly come his way. I mean, the left is fit to be tied here. They're foaming at the mouth with hatred. There is nothing that will console these people. And they're currently hoping for a military coup. Something, anything, stop what they see as the dismantling of their agenda, the dismantling of their utopian fantasy, wherein every woman in the nation has had at least one abortion, and nothing with even the semblance of morality or decency was allowed to exist any longer. Yes, I am aware, I know. I'm not approaching this from the pious posture some of you are, wherein it matters not an iota who fills the vacancy. But I guess my piousness is nowhere near yours. So I can make the logical comparison between what might have been other side one and what is currently happening in this nation. Called deductive reasoning. God doesn't have a problem with deductive reasoning. I know, I'm off on a rant again, but my pulse just starts racing whenever people start pontificating about their opinion as though it were gospel. Then passing sentence on anyone that disagrees with them. It's just a thing with me. Look, if you don't like what I talk about on my radio program, then by all means, start your own. The barrier to entry is pretty low. Hey, I've got a radio program, so you know that's the truth. There is no barrier to entry. But don't try to make me see something your way. When seeing it your way would force me to deny the facts as they are. Because I'm not going to do it. Intellectually honest. Because if I start being intellectually disingenuous, like some of you are being, then there will be no end to the hypocrisy. Anyway, it was a good trip out west. I went to California. I got to see some old friends, and I got to visit the old neighborhood, and I got to preach two services for someone who I've known since I was 13 years old. And it was a lot warmer in California than it is here in Wisconsin, so the sun on my face was a welcome respite. Now that we're back, we'll be at it for the next few weeks. Then I don't know, if I'm able to do the program from the road, I will, but I'm going back on the road soon. I think this time it's Florida, but I will let you know. I'm hoping that I can get a good connection and I'll bring a microphone along and we can do it on the road. We can have the program, away from the studio. Well, today, we're going to be talking about a lot of things, and I believe they're important things because they have to do with more than just the politics of the nation. It's not about politics. It's about understanding where we fit in as the church, what our role is, and what we're supposed to be doing now that so many are saying we've dodged the bullet. And I said something in my sermon on Sunday night that I want to repeat here tonight, and that is we might have dodged the bullet, but the cannonball is still headed straight for us. So we might have avoided the bullet, but the cannonball is still coming. And the only thing that will avert the cannonball is repentance. Again, we have to be intellectually honest. We have to acknowledge that God does not blot out our sins without us having repented, whether individually or as a nation. And so when there is no repentance forthcoming, although we've received yet another season of seeming grace, the cannonball still headed towards us. So we can either spend the next 4 years talking about how our guy didn't get in, and so nobody but our guy is good enough to do anything of value, or acknowledge that we still have some time to preach the gospel, acknowledge that a good thing was done and that the Supreme Court didn't swing hard left, and acknowledge that contrary to all the naysayers, it seems that the new president is keeping the promises he made while on the campaign trail. So, balance. Be honest. I know, you don't like the guy. Oh, horrible. Doing some good things. Now, with that, I want to get to your questions. And delve into a couple of articles that I think are very telling. And sort of feel the pulse of the nation 2 weeks into the new administration. Because apparently last night, what was it, Berkeley? Decided to set itself on fire. So this is the future of the nation. Young people with no self-control who are willing to light ablaze their own institution of education. So looking to the future, really am. I think we will have to reinstate duels shortly because we can't have conversations anymore. Even among Christians, we can't have conversations anymore. We stake our positions. And if they are positions of reason and logic and intellectual honesty, that would be one thing. But when our positions are intellectually disingenuous, and we've staked our position nevertheless, and we're unwilling to see facts, then we're going to have real issues. So I'm thinking, you know, 5-10 years down the road, reinstitute the duel. So whenever you disagree with somebody, you stand back to back, you take 10 paces, turn around and shoot. And that's how you're going to settle arguments. Because if anybody thinks this is progress, if anybody thinks these are signs of mankind evolving, you're living in a cave. It's not happening. I think the fact that 20-somethings, young people who are supposedly going to college to be educated, people of higher learning, are acting like brutes and animals, should sort of tell us that there's no such thing as evolution. But, you know, I digress. Now, the first thing I want to talk about tonight, a news article, and it came across my feed as I was getting ready to go live. So this is fresh. Because, well, it'll stick in the craw of the sticks in the mud. And I want to give you a sleepless night. If you're one of those people, that's just a stick in the mud. Why not give you a sleepless night? Because it's the attitude, man. It's the attitude. You can say something without the attitude. Without the self-righteousness. So yeah, I'm going to read this article. And since it is my show, it's my prerogative to talk about whatever it is I want to talk about. So here it goes. This is hot off the presses, as the kids like to say. And it is from the Christian Post. Yes, I know, it's the Christian Post. Nobody can believe the Christian Post. It's got the word Christian in it. And that's veiled, allegiance to the darkness or something. Because right now, man, the theories that are coming out are just preposterous. If you sit and listen to some of these theories, you're going to scratch your head until you make your scalp bleed. Anyway, Christian Post, Washington. Members of Congress introduced legislation in the House and Senate on Wednesday, which was yesterday, that would restore the rights of churches and pastors to speak and advocate politically from the pulpit without fear of their tax-exempt status being revoked by the Internal Revenue Service. A preacher should not have to get permission from the IRS to be able to preach to their congregation, and that is what has been happening. Oh, no, he didn't. It can't be true. Can it? An administration actually standing up for churches. Say it ain't so. So, they've introduced legislation for the rights of churches and pastors to speak and advocate politically from the pulpit. That means that you don't have to, you know, sidestep issues and talk to your people in a veiled manner for fear of recrimination. So, again, I'm going to continue with the article because it's good stuff. And I know that some of you have a problem with the notion of 501c3, but getting past that for a second, okay? Again, this is a good thing. House Majority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana said Wednesday that a preacher should not have to get permission from the IRS to be able to preach to their congregation, and that is what has been happening. Scalise and Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, both of the Republican persuasion, have introduced the Free Speech Fairness Act. That's a good title. A measure that would amend the Johnson Amendment of 1954. The six-decade-old law has effectively threatened churches and other 501c3 nonprofit organizations with revocation of their tax-exempt status if they endorse a political candidate. The measure was first introduced by Scalise last September in the last legislative session, just days before pastors and churches around the country participated in Pulpit Freedom Sunday. I'm going to stop here for a second and ask you a question of logic. Do you think, believe, or have any hope that this legislation would have seen the light of day had the other side won? I'll let you think about it. Do you think this would be happening if the other side had won? Keep that in mind. The IRS has hung like a cloud over the free speech rights of so many organizations, threatening to take away their tax-exempt status if they disseminated a message that was important to their congregation. That's not the role of government, Scalise stated. That's not the kind of separation of powers that exists in the Constitution to allow people to express their religious beliefs. Now, to those of you that are saying, well, you know, we shouldn't be talking politics from the pulpit either. It extended far beyond politics. You could no longer call sin, sin. You could no longer say that marriage was between a man and a woman. You could no longer say that God found the act of homosexuality abominable. Without fear of recrimination from the IRS. And some people, because they feared losing their 501c3, and I realize this is a cowardly gesture, but they did it anyway. Some people just shut up and didn't say a thing. Out of fear. Own government. And as Scalise pointed out, that's not the kind of separation of powers that exists in the Constitution. In addition to Scalise and Lankford, the legislation is supported by a number of their congressional colleagues, including freshman Republican Mike Johnson, Republican Louisiana, and Southern Baptist pastor Republican Jody Heiss of Georgia. It continues and it says, any nonprofit institution should not have to worry about the IRS watching and monitoring what they say. It's a very simple principle. This allows an individual to have their constitutional rights, Lankford, a former Baptist youth group leader, said. When you work for a nonprofit organization, you don't lose your rights to assembly. You don't lose your rights to free press. You don't lose your Second Amendment rights. You don't lose your rights to privacy. But for whatever reason, we have said that if you work for a nonprofit organization, you do lose your right to free speech. That is absurd, and I agree. So again, I would beg for you to consider, would we even be discussing this had the other side won? Now, Lankford assured that the legislation does not allow churches and nonprofit organizations to engage in political campaigning. And that's a good thing. We shouldn't be engaging in political campaigning. We should be preaching the truth. But see, when the truth is offensive to the current power structure, they legislate your silence. And so this new administration said that's not the way legislation should work. You're allowed to speak freely and call sin, sin. You're allowed to have freedom of speech even if you are a nonprofit. The article continues and it says, according to a fact sheet about the legislation provided by the social conservative advocacy group Family Research Council, the bill protects political activities that fall within the organization's regular and customary activities, so long as the activities carry out the organization's tax-exempt purpose. It takes the IRS standing in the back of a church waiting to see what a pastor says or monitoring a newsletter from some nonprofit organization to make sure that they don't have inconsistent speech. So that honestly should and is, I believe it is, a weight off the shoulders of a lot of pastors. Again, there's a case to be made that they shouldn't have been concerned about it in the first place. There's a case to be made that their concern about having their tax-exempt status revoked is cowardice on its face. But it's God who will judge. And if the current administration will make it easier for preachers to preach, I'm all for it. And the article continues and it says, this bill is just saying that if you are a nonprofit, you can speak like anyone else in the country. The legislation that Steve Scalise and others have dropped in the House is the exact same legislation that we have dropped in the Senate. It is our goal to be able to move through to a very basic and hopefully non-controversial conversation. What is controversial about people speaking in America? Well, see, the controversy, and I will answer that question, the controversy about people speaking freely in America is that only certain kind of speech has been free for the past 8 years. If you didn't toe the line, if you didn't stand up and applaud when, they decided that a man wearing a dress can use the same restroom as your little girl, well, then you were a bigot and you were a xenophobe and you needed to just shut up because this was progress and that's the way progress works. You're just backwards, aren't you? See, but now they're saying, hey, you know, if you're a Christian, you can speak up like everyone else. Okay, this should make you realize that the church has been a persecuted class in America, of all places, for the past 8 years. The fact that they're having to pass a bill that simply says, as a Christian and as a pastor, you have the same rights as every other citizen of this nation. Now, the article continues and it says, the introduction of the legislation comes after President Donald Trump made it one of his major campaign promises to evangelical leaders. Trump said during the 2016 presidential campaign that he would do what he could to roll back the Johnson Amendment, suggesting that he would sign the Free Speech Fairness Act if it made it to his desk. Ooh, the man is keeping his word. Well, you know, stranger things. Along with the Congress members, a number of pastors and religious freedom activists were present for the rollout of the bill. And it just goes through a list of a few pastors. They've decided that it's a good thing, too. It was July 2nd, 1954, when Lyndon Baines Johnson, then senator, returned to the Senate angry at Frank Gannett and H.L. Hunt, two businessmen who had opposed him through their non-for-profit corporations. He brought that anger to the Senate in the form of what is known as the Johnson Amendment, which was passed without any discussion and on a voice vote only, Garlow explained. A chief legislative aide of Senator Johnson admitted later that they did not have churches in mind at all. They were just ticked off at two businessmen who had opposed Johnson because they thought he was soft on communism. So there you go. FRC President Tony Perkins, a leading proponent of the measure, asserted that the United States would look much different today if it wasn't for the pastors throughout American history who cried out for social justice. He continues and he says, since the birth of our nation, pastors and churches have been at the forefront of shaping public policy and debate. Well, we took a hiatus, didn't we? We took a break, I guess you could say, because we haven't been shaping anything. We've been just sitting there judging each other and trying to poke each other's eyes out. And, you know, not being what Christ called us to be. Let's just put it that way. Because we've wasted a lot of time trying to get our little piece of the pie. We've wasted a lot of time trying to get a leg up and trying to, I don't know, get into the spotlight. Not realizing how precious a thing time is. Not realizing that while we were fighting each other, while we were infighting, the darkness was growing and consuming. And because it was consuming, it was growing some more. So if we can strike a blow, if we can roll back the darkness a little bit, I think it's a good thing. Now, I want to end with what a pastor from Houston says. It says, Herman Castano, who pastors a minority church in Houston, Texas, was one of five Houston area pastors whose sermons were subpoenaed by former Houston Mayor Anise Parker with the threat of fine or imprisonment in 2014 over their opposition to the city's LGBT non-discrimination ordinance that opened up bathrooms and locker rooms on the basis of gender identity. So it's not just about the politics. For those of you that are, we shouldn't be talking politics from pulpits anyway. No, this guy, this pastor in Houston, had his sermons subpoenaed by the former Houston mayor, who happened to be a lesbian, with the threat of a fine or imprisonment because he spoke up against the city's ordinance about using whatever bathroom you feel that you identify with as your gender. Yeah, this is the madness that we've allowed to creep in unchecked while we were too busy fighting each other. And this pastor from Houston says this: I understand what persecution is because I experienced it myself. We experienced that in Houston when they subpoenaed our sermons just for speaking on the issues that the Bible speaks about. Just for speaking to our congregation. I am here today because I believe that it is not fair to talk about freedom of speech, yet that freedom of speech ends when I stand behind the pulpit. It is not fair to say that there is free speech when government, like the IRS, is monitoring what I speak and say based on the Bible and will intimidate me and make me pay a high price for preaching to my congregation. We need to repeal the Johnson Amendment because I have seen the faces of pastors, not only the pastors of big congregations, but the pastors of smaller congregations, Castano said. I have seen the fear in their heart holding them back from speaking truth, and I have seen them hold back from what will make a difference for their own people because they do not want the doors of their church buildings closed or their 501c3 removed. So, yeah, pastors being able to speak their conscience and say they have to from the pulpit without fear of recrimination. That sounds downright dastardly, doesn't it? That's nefarious, isn't it? What's their agenda? There must be some insidious thing behind the scenes because we all know this administration couldn't possibly be standing up for Christians because some YouTube prophet said he wouldn't. The narrative is the narrative. I get it. Don't get swayed by facts. Don't matter when they contradict your preconceived notions, do they? And before I get barraged by emails, yes, I know the whole contention about 501c3 and how they're the spawn of Beelzebub himself. But you know what? No matter what, these people will not admit that they're wrong, or that they were wrong, or that they overshot, or that they used bombastic and unfounded rhetoric because it played well with a certain segment of the populace. They will cling to the narrative until their irrelevance becomes clear even to themselves. Then who knows, maybe they'll get a vision of starting a commune or, you know, a little ranch on some secluded piece of land and having the elect come join them in anticipation of something or another. Why are we so easily swayed as believers? Why are so many Christians so gullible and so willing to regurgitate what other people are saying about other people without doing the research themselves? If what you are parroting is something someone else said without you having done the due diligence, then it just makes you lazy and uninformed. Now, well, on to your questions. But before we get to them, I would ask that you please Brother Douglas's wife in your prayers, as she is going through chemo, and which in turn, I guess, lowers the platelet levels, which in turn leaves her fatigued. So please, just please remember Brother Douglas's wife in your prayers, as I have been every morning during my prayer time. Well, our first question comes from our Brother Douglas, and it is as follows. Dear Michael Buldia, I am sure you are aware of the protests against President Trump's immigration policy against those that come to America from nations that support terrorists. Many have argued against it, saying we have a moral obligation to take them in as Christian nation. Is there a biblical answer on how this situation should be handled? You are always in my prayers. God bless you, Brother Douglas. You are in my prayers as well. God bless you also. Well, let me begin by saying this. If God did not believe in the sovereignty of nations, or that a nation should have borders, why did he say that he would increase Israel's borders, or that he would make them a great nation? Look, God understands that there are different peoples and different tongues. It's okay, what ruffles my feathers, I guess. Let me start here. What bothers me, it's that it's usually the people who despise God and who despise Christianity, and most of all Christians, that miraculously insist upon the notion that we are a Christian nation every time they're trying to guilt everyone into doing something that flies in the face of self-preservation. If you are a godless, foul, dehumanized, hedonistic, nasty, all-around despicable human being who insists upon the notion that Christians are no better than cockroaches, then all of a sudden start insisting that we're a Christian nation, so we should accept all the refugees no matter who they are or where they come from, I call a flag on the play. Yes, I'm talking to you, Nancy Pelosi. I'm talking to you. Look, a man, any man, has the biblical right to defend his family and his home. What is happening throughout Europe and what they've been attempting here is nothing less than a slow-moving invasion. It is not refugees fleeing war-torn nations. It is people taking advantage of a lax system. No one is saying they can't immigrate. Just do it legally. And if you happen to be from places that are hotbeds of extremism, if you happen to be from places where over 90% of the people think that Jews are pigs and Christians should be beheaded, then maybe you could wait a little bit until we get a good vetting system into place so that we find out whether you're one of those people that wants to behead Christians or not. Preservation is not a sin. But to drive home the point, I came across an article regarding an exchange that the aforementioned Nancy Pelosi had with a woman who lost her son to violence at the hands of an illegal immigrant. Yes, illegal. Not undocumented. Illegal. I am an immigrant. My parents immigrated legally. So don't anyone try to guilt trip me. You know, my skin's far too thought for that. I've seen far too much for it to work. So that's not going to work. I'm an immigrant, and I'm for legal immigration. But I'm also for the self-preservation of a nation and its borders. We can't have 7 billion people moving to America, because then it wouldn't be America anymore. Now, at a CNN town hall Tuesday night, Nancy Pelosi was asked by a sobbing mother who lost her son to an illegal immigrant, who she said brutally tortured him before death, which one of her grandchildren she would give up to make room for an illegal. And this is a quote by the woman: "If you need to go home tonight and line up your babies, as you say, and your grandbabies, which one of them could you look in their eyes today and tell them that they are expendable for another foreign person to have a nicer life? Which one would you look to say, you, my child, are expendable for someone else to come over here and not follow the law and have a nicer life?" Laura Wilkerson, who said her son was slaughtered by an illegal immigrant, asked Pelosi. And of course, Nancy Pelosi, of all people, invokes God. "I pray for you." You don't. You lying bag of wrinkles. You don't pray for anyone. "I pray for you." Again, we all pray that none of us had to experience what you've experienced. You don't pray, you Botox queen. Seriously, these people invoke God every time they're pinned into a corner. But this mother's question stands. Which one of your children would you look to and say, "You're expendable for a foreign person to have a nicer life in lieu of you"? Look, there's a reason for borders. And what we have to understand is that immigration has changed over the decades. Even back in the 80s, people were coming here to start a new life. They were coming here to get jobs, to assimilate, to learn the language. Now they're coming here to change the nation to suit their traditions. They're coming here to change the nation and demand that we adopt their way of life. And what is their way of life? Well, read up on Sharia law. It's a fascinating read. But what you need to understand is that there really is no room in Sharia for Christians. There really is no room in Sharia for Jews. In fact, there is no room in Sharia for anyone other than the adherents of Sharia. These are the people that we are attempting to vet. We need to get the vetting process into place. And if you are willing, as an elected official, to endanger the life of your constituency, of the people that elected you and put you into office, in lieu of someone who is illegal, who has no place being in the nation because they came across the border without the requisite vetting or paperwork, then your criminality should be punished. If you are an elected official and you're looking in the faces of those who elected you to office and say, "These illegal people are more important than your safety, they're more important than your family, they're more important than you," then you should be tried for treason. Elected officials have a responsibility to their constituency, not to illegal immigrants. So again, this comes from a position of one who is an immigrant. I immigrated to this nation. but I did it legally. I came with my family. My grandfather and my father and my mother and my grandmother were expelled. They were kicked out of Romania. And we were taken to Italy. We spent 3 months there. A Romanian pastor in California found us an apartment and sponsored us, because back then you needed something called a sponsorship. And after we got our visas, we got on a plane and we came to California and we got our green cards. And years later, I became a citizen. And I never wanted to wage jihad against the nation that accepted and embraced me. My mission over the last 30 years has been to preach repentance in order to keep the nation that embraced and accepted me from being judged. So, what do I say to people that invoke Christianity as a defense? God does not have an issue with borders or nations. And as far as our Christian duty is concerned, America is and has been for a very long time the most generous nation on the face of planet Earth. More money leaves this nation to help the poor and downtrodden than from anywhere else. Look, if I showed you a spreadsheet of our support, 98% of it comes from America. And with it, we're able to feed over 80 kids in Romania. We're able to clothe naked people, provide for widows, and do a lot of different things because of the generosity of the American people. But it's one thing to be generous. It's quite another to be self-destructive and even suicidal. I'm not saying don't help refugees. But what I am saying is make sure that those people who desire to come to your nation do so wanting to assimilate and not wanting to conquer. And with that, I thank you all for listening. It's been great being back live. We'll see you next week. Send in your questions and comments and whatever else. And until then, may God bless you. May God keep you. And may you grow in wisdom. Gino, if you're there or if you have anything to say, now is your time. If not, everybody, have a good night and God bless you.